Tonight, my guest is Will Tuttle. He is about to tour New Zealand to discuss the contents of what has been his best-selling book, The World Peace Diet. Will describes himself as an educator and author devoted to cultural healing and awakening. He believes we can all contribute to solving many of the dilemmas, environmental, social and political, that we're facing on this planet by first simply being conscious of what we eat. And Will joins us from Christchurch. Hi, Will.
Hi, Paul. Great to be with you. Thank you.
Nice to have you here as well. Now, I see you're also a composer. First question, what came first?
Well, actually, the music came first. The piano since I was a little kid.
Yeah. So that's the one thing that's been there the longest.
Right. Yeah, that's gone through everything since I was probably 3 years old. I started playing the piano, and then I became a composer in my early 20s. But not too long after that, actually, I started questioning the culture's food or rituals, our meals, and made a change.
What got you thinking about that?
Actually, the main, you know, I didn't think about it typically at all growing up because I was raised in a family where we ate the usual meals, lots of meat, dairy products, and eggs, and I just never questioned it, really. And I actually participated in the summers going to dairies, and we would kill our own chickens and cows, you know, when they stopped giving enough milk and so forth. But I, after college, I ended up undertaking a journey across the United States, and I lived for a while at a community back in the mid-1970s. It was basically, what you would call probably back then, a hippie commune type place. And it was the largest one in the world, about 900 people, and no one ate any meat, actually, or dairy or eggs. And so I saw 900 people, they were not dying of a protein deficiency or a calcium deficiency or anything else. They were thriving. And so I stopped eating meat then, and about 5 years later when I found out about the routine cruelty to cows for dairy products and chickens for eggs, I became a vegan, what's called a vegan, in 1980, so about 34 years ago.
Right. So this commune, were they new ideas in eating in those days?
Yeah, that was a very new idea. You know, there had been a little bit written about the fact that eating lower on the food chain, in other words, eating a more plant-based diet, is more kind to starving people. You know, we're feeding so much grain to animals while people are going hungry. And so if we want to contribute to solving that problem and to not having so much war, which very much is driven by starving people and the inequity of that. So that was one of their main reasons. And then the other main reason was just the routine cruelty to animals for food. So it was a new idea, but it was something I found out later was actually a very ancient idea as well.
What are we designed to do here? Are we designed to eat a particular sort of group of foods and that we've sort of slipped the design at some point along the way? Or what we're eating, has that been an evolutionary thing to get to where we are today? I'm trying to work out what's sort of right and what's wrong, you know?
Right, great question. Yeah, basically, I have a whole chapter devoted to that. It's called The Intelligence of Human Physiology. And basically, Paul, I think when you look at human beings, when you look just carefully at our physiology, you will see that we have the dentition, you know, the teeth, saliva, jaw structure. All of these things are really designed for plant-based foods.
Right.
We don't have strong hydrochloric acid in our stomachs to break down proteins. We have a long digestive tract that gets very clogged up with meat and especially with dairy products. And we have a circulatory system that gets clogged up with saturated fat and cholesterol that comes from these things. So our bodies, you know, like the body, I think, and they're miraculous. I mean, they will just do the best they can with whatever we give them. But what I discovered really is that all of us have been given the gift of a human body that does not require any animal to suffer to get all the nutrients that we need. But we're all born into a society that basically forces us from the time we're little children to take this gift we've been given by the benevolent creator and throw it back into his or her face and say, well, I'm going to eat meat and dairy anyway and stab animals and hurt them. And when we do that, we find we actually get a lot of the diseases that come from this, as well as environmental devastation and other detrimental things that happen that I discuss in my book and that I'll be talking about here in New Zealand.
Those are recent attitudes, though, aren't they? If you go back into the history, the fossil record, if you like. I mean, people weren't intellectualizing what they were eating, were they? They were grabbing anything they could get out on the plains or wherever.
Well, yeah, it's possible. We don't really know, you know, what happened. I mean, there's vast conflicting ideas among anthropologists and archaeologists. We don't even know what happened, you know, recently in 9/11 or who knows what, all these other things we don't really know. So when you go back into prehistory, there's masses of, the general ideas of archaeologists and anthropologists are always changing. But, Richard Leakey, for example, probably the premier archaeologist in the world, says that absolutely we're designed to eating plants, and that's what people ate was plants. We did not eat meat. We did not have the dentition for meat. We've never eaten a lot of meat. It's been a big illusion, pretty much propagated in part by the meat, dairy, and egg industries. But really, what we did in the past, it's hard to know exactly, but we can certainly see if we want to have a future for our children, we should move toward a plant-based diet.
Yeah, I guess the point I'm trying to make is if you aren't aware that as you said, the benevolent creator has provided you with these animals, and you don't see it like that, you don't, I guess, think of it as a pushback against the natural order of things. You just think you're finding your food, and we're all now in that mindset, aren't we? After a very long time.
Well, the thing is, herding animals, which is owning them as property for food, is a whole different thing. And that's relatively recent. That only goes back between 8,000 and 10,000 years ago. We started owning animals as property for food. So we reduced them from being mysterious and powerful cohabitants of the earth with us, and maybe occasionally hunting them and eating them. But most of the earlier societies, it's now well understood, were primarily gatherers, and most of their food came from plants. But once we started owning animals as property for food, it started in the Eastern Mediterranean. And it really began a tremendous revolution where we developed a wealthy elite that controlled most of the resources. Animals became wealth. We invented war. We invented slavery. We reduced the status of women. We created a very sort of violent, warlike culture that spread throughout the world. And we're born into that culture today because we're still eating the same food. So this is a recent phenomenon, actually.
Thinking back to those early 70s that you mentioned a few minutes ago and the commune situation, what was the attitude of mainstream sort of populace to groups like that? Not sort of the commune part of it, but more specifically, you know, the stand on eating. Was that seen as sort of weirdo behavior and subversive eating, if you know what I mean?
Right, exactly. Of course it was. I mean, gosh, back in the early 70s, I remember my mother, when I asked her if what we're eating is what everybody eats, my mother said, well, there are vegetarians, but I've never met one. kind of like they're hypothetical people. They don't really exist. And so I think back then it was really seen as something quite strange. But I think, I've seen in the last, say, 40 years since I went vegetarian, there's been enormous progress made. We now understand that we can get all the nutrients we need. We can be healthy. It's better for the earth. It's better for climate change. It's better for, the animals and wildlife and so forth. So I think we're seeing a very healthy, positive change moving in the direction of understanding that we're not designed to eat animal foods. And when we do that, it not only harms the earth and the animals, but it reduces our natural compassion and our natural intelligence.
So what do you think drives the attitude of, I guess, meat eaters, some meat eaters, and the way they see and describe vegetarians? You know, some people will sort of make out that they're not as vital, they don't have as much energy, that you need to eat more, that sort of thing. There's more of a food judgment going on there. There's a judgment on who your personality, the sort of culture you
Right. Well, you know, the
is
thing
that true?
Is, Paul, I think basically we can see very clearly that anyone who's eating meat or dairy products or eggs is only doing it for one reason. The one reason they're doing it is they're simply following orders. You know, they're just doing what they were told to do from every institution in society, from the family, parents, relatives, teachers, religion, the ads on TV and corporations and government. You know, it's been completely indoctrinated. We're injected with a program, and it's basically a robotic behavior in the sense we're just doing unthinkingly. And we're also given, besides eating meat and dairy, we're given all kinds of rationalizations why we're supposed to do that. And one of those is that, well, if you don't do it, you won't be as vital, you won't be as strong, but it's just ridiculous. I mean, the strongest man in the world right now probably is Patrick Bubanian from Germany. He just carried, I think it was a half a ton, 1,000 pounds, over 10 meters. So no one is strong. Some of the greatest runners in the world are vegans. I myself haven't been to a doctor in 40 years.
And really?
I mean, it's way healthier eating a plant-based diet. Your veins aren't all clogged up with saturated fat and cholesterol. We really have a less of a risk for all the major diseases that are afflicting people. But in my own case, and I think this is really true in general, I never did it for my health. I did it for the health of the chickens and the pigs and the cows. But I think it comes back. You know, when we're kind and loving to others, we're not going to suffer. We're going to be healthier and happier.
That's what I was heading towards. And attitudes like that of meat eaters and sort of conventional eaters to vegetarians, vegans, whatever. Is this where you start to see this aggression which upsets, well, peace?
Right.
That it's perpetuates a conflict situation between groups of people.
It does, actually.
You know, and if so, what drives that? What are the drivers of that?
Well, the drivers, you know, I used to teach philosophy in college, and in the Republic, Plato has Socrates talking about how the fact that if we want to eat meat, then we'll have to have more land. If we have to have more land, then we'll have to go to war against other people. We'll have to fight against them. You know, the very first word for war on this planet is the ancient Sanskrit word gavya, which means the desire for more cows. So from the very beginning, people started owning animals. They started looking to see other people. They had cows, cows and sheep and goats. The first livestock were wealth. They would try to steal those. Hmm. And so this whole conflict and this whole system, really, of mass conflict began over eating animal foods. And today, the fact is that no one can deny, this is well known, we're growing enough food to feed between 12 and 15 billion people. We only have 7.4 billion. We have enough to feed everybody twice as much as they can eat. But we have, by very conservative estimate, a billion of our brothers and sisters starving to death because most of the grain and legumes that are grown, the corn and soy and wheat and alfalfa and so forth, are fed to imprisoned animals while people go hungry. And that kind of rampant inequality and injustice really is what drives war and makes peace so difficult.
Hmm. But to change that in any way, you'd have to have a huge buy-in from all sorts of cultures and countries. And
right.
How do you do that? I guess that's your mission, is it?
That's it. That's what we're driving at. I just spent a few, some time giving lectures in Taiwan and then in Australia. Now we're in New Zealand. And, of course, I've spoken quite a bit in Europe and, of course, around North America, the United States, and Canada. And I think I'm not the only one. But I think, my book, The World Peace Diet, has been translated into probably 12 languages by now. So it really is, you're right, it is a global phenomenon. It's kind of like a mass hypnosis that has been injected into everybody. And what we're talking about with veganism is basically waking up from the delusion of being essentially violent, predatory, warlike, dominating people, and learning to look with eyes of kindness and compassion, not just to other people, but especially to animals who really are vulnerable in our hands, to wildlife, to future generations, to ecosystems, and living as best we can lives that reflect a mentality of kindness and love to others.
We have an issue at the moment with Japanese whalers in our waters.
Uh-huh.
Now, and this possibly illustrates the two sort of camps, if you like. On one side, you've got, well, a research institute, they call it that, but we sort of know that it's not. Just because you put .org in your web address doesn't mean you're lovey-dovey. But obviously the people who run that operation, they see whales as purely a resource. They don't think of them as even living creatures beyond how you get them up the ramp, chop them up, and package them however which way you do it.
Exactly.
And yet there are others who see them as, well, some people even think they're on a par with or the human, the ocean version of the human or the thinking being. There's a huge gulf between the thinkings there.
Right, exactly, Paul. It's wonderful to see.
Who has to change and how can you change them?
Right, exactly. Well, I think the thing is it really has to do with somehow working to resensitize people to their own inner wisdom, because all of us actually are forced from the time of little kids through sitting down at tables with adults who are eating meat and dairy products and eggs to do just what you're saying, to see a being as a mere resource, as a commodity, as something we buy and sell, and like sacks of cement, we just cut them up. We don't, when we're having bacon in the morning, we don't say, gosh, I wonder what she was like. I wonder what her feelings were. No. It's just a piece of meat. It's just bacon. We learn to harden our hearts and just see a thing instead of seeing a being. Now, there is a good side to human beings. When we see a whale, since we're not eating them every day, we can see them as beings. But I think we, and that's beautiful. But if we're, you know, if we're paid to kill them, then we'd rather not do that. We'd rather see them as things. And that's, I think, you know, that whole idea of having an economic system where animals are exploited for money and products, as they are by the billions on this planet, that's what really blinds people to it. And then the fact that we're all eating them regularly. So I would just encourage listeners to think of it that way. You know, like when I was in Korea, I would talk to people, and they would say they would never eat cow, but they wouldn't have any problem eating a dog, for example. And then, of course, here, that would be repulsive. But we have to realize it's culturally driven, basically. And
but why is that so revolting, really? you know, once you strip it all away, it's just another four-legged animal of many that we process and eat all the time. What's so special about man's best friend?
Right, exactly, because I think it's revolting because we don't see them as things. We see them as beings. We realize that they have feelings.
So we're very selective.
Their interests are important to them.
We're very selective, aren't we?
We are.
And who we choose.
Because I think we've been forced to abandon our natural compassion and wisdom by our society.
So the World Peace Diet, obviously, if people want to find out about that, there's the book.
Uh-huh.
But for people listening now, to get them interested, really, what should they be thinking about eating if they want to not only improve their diet and health, uh-huh, I'm sure you'd say, but to contribute to, in a small way, some way, personal way, by doing this, to, you know, aiding this bigger concept,
right,
of world peace?
Well, I think there's the most important thing anyone can do is to move toward eating a completely plant-based diet. And also, I think foods that are organically grown is much better than conventionally grown foods with chemical fertilizers and herbicides and pesticides and fungicides. And then the other thing I think it's really helpful is that they be as minimally processed as possible. Chemical preservatives and things are not very healthy. But the most important thing is to move toward a plant-based diet. And what I've seen in the 40 years since I've been a vegetarian, and almost 35 now as a vegan, there's more and more foods that are substitutes. But basically, most people are eating vegan foods every day. We're eating fruits, we're eating vegetables, we're eating salads, we're eating potatoes, we're eating pasta, we're eating beans of various kinds. And it's nowadays, I mean, there's vegan ice cream and cheese and burgers and all kinds of things, more and more, mayonnaise and all these things. So actually, a lot of people, I think it's not that hard to actually go to a vegan diet completely without even noticing it, really. I mean, the technology, in a sense, of replicating those is really good. But I think it is helpful to eat less processed foods as we go along. But it's certainly a lot healthier and better for the environment, too, and for animals as well.
On our website, Will, we've got the details of your talks and so on and so forth, links to the book. Thank you for coming on the program. Hope you enjoy your stay.
Oh, I'm so glad to be here in New Zealand. It's a beautiful country, and I look forward to meeting the beautiful people that are here. Thanks so much, Paul.
Dr. Will Tuttle on the World Peace Diet. And I think you can go to Amazon to purchase the book. But as I say, we have the details on our website.